Thank you, Dr. Aiken. It's a privilege to participate in the central event in the life of our institution. And thank you, boys singers. It's a privilege to be associated with you day by day. Dr. Aiken mentioned that we have a grandson. His name is Rafe, and the only reason he's not on the platform is because they're coming in tonight. And if you would like to know about Rafe, Retta has about 50 digital images on her screensaver of Rafe, and they change every 15 seconds. So you can see his entire first 6 months in just a matter of moments. We have enjoyed the time that we have spent here a very great deal. And one of the reasons, of course, it's a great place to live, and I do not know of a better place for someone like me to work. But we spent most of the 10 years before we came here in two non-American cultures. Honolulu, Hawaii, and New Orleans. And so we are genuinely glad to be back in America. Unexpected moments can color our lives forever. Some of you remember December 7, 1941, when the news came of the devastating attack on the Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor, and the nation was drawn into an awful world war. More of us remember November 22, 1963, when John F. Kennedy was struck down, and for the first time in American history, that entire thing played out on live television over about 4 days. And we will never forget those images. All of us remember September 11, 2001. But unexpected moments that have profound effect on us do not have to be of world or even national significance. The memories are not pleasant. But I remember the day as a 17-year-old pastor when I learned that a friendly denominational worker that I had become acquainted with was a pedophile. I remember several years later looking forward to a national appearance by a prominent pastor, one of the finest preachers in America. And he simply did not show, nor did he return to his pulpit. And decades of serial moral failure became known. In my 30s, a man that I revered every bit as much as I did my own father left town with a co-worker. All of his children were grown and in ministry. And he simply abandoned his ministry, his wife of over 40 years, and everything that he had stood for. I've sat across the desk as a pastor from lay leaders who have told me with joy that God led them into the adulterous relationship that destroyed their family. These are not pleasant, to say the least, but I think they need to be acknowledged. There was an evangelist, famous evangelist, A man who had literally risked his life a number of times. Few of us will ever do that. And he announced that his new young lover was God's reward for his faithful service. And on it goes with heartbreaking regularity. How can it be? You know, some of these things have to give us pause. How can it be? And if them, why not us? How can someone who has devoted their life to Christ and the church just collapse morally and turn their back on everything they hold dear? We all know we're fully human, but I suspect that most of us really believe that there are some things we would never do. Don't be so sure. We are most vulnerable when we feel strongest. It's difficult to acknowledge or talk about these things. It's difficult to find any kind of an explanation for it. It is such a stunning reality. But tucked away in a dusty corner of the Old Testament, there was an unexpected moment that I think sheds light on the cause of sudden moral collapse. And it is found in Ezekiel chapter 8. This prophet Ezekiel was a man of passionate intensity. He has been described as a sensitive soul caught in the cross currents of history, driven by his zeal for God and painfully aware of the tragedy of his people. His ministry, at least most of it, was to exiles in Babylon. When the moment that we will look at occurred, he had been in Babylon several years along with other exiles, but the temple still stood on Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And they still had high hopes that they would go home and their lives would be restored. And as the elders of the exiles waited before his house, a devastating vision descended on Ezekiel. Prior to that time, he and others had held out the hope that judgment would not come. But after that day, there was no doubt, because that vision revealed things that were unknown and unseen by any eye that demanded that God judge. And then is now, it is His people that God hold responsible for the condition of their nation. In Ezekiel chapter 8, the vision is 8 to 11. And since my purpose is limited, I'll not say much about it, but it is a vision that explained to Ezekiel why there was no hope judgment would not fall. In chapter 8, there are five things shown in the vision that are like spitting in the face of God. And they're breathtaking, even simply to read about them, that anybody would be so bold. And all five of them took place within the temple compound. We're going to look at just one of those five things and since the day I stumbled across the verse reading the Old Testament long ago, it has stuck in my mind and had a profound impact on me. If you would, follow with me as I read Ezekiel 8, 7 to 12. Then he brought me to the entrance of the court. And when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. He said to me, Son of man, now dig through the wall. So I dug through the wall, and behold, an entrance. And he said to me, Go in and see the wicked abominations that they are committing here. So I entered and looked, and behold, every form of creeping things and beasts and detestable things with all the idols of the house of Israel were carved on the wall all around. Standing in front of them were 70 elders of the house of Israel, with Jaazaniah the son of Shaphan standing among them, each man with his censer in his hand, and the fragrance of the cloud of incense rising. Then he said to me, Son of man, do you see what the elders of the house of Israel are committing in the dark, each man in the room of his carved images? For they say, the Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. In the majestic language of the King James Bible, verse 12 reads, Then he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery. For they say, The Lord seeth us not. The Lord hath forsaken the land. I fear that often our insults to God also occur in a context that ought to be devoted to the purest and highest purposes. No matter how reflective of truth our faith and the way of our worship is, when the form of what we do replaces the substance, there is death. And simply, three observations about this passage. In Ezekiel 8, 7 and 8, there is the disintegration of the wall. Now, if I understand the language correctly, this seems to be one of those rooms that had as an outside wall the courtyard around the temple. And in the vision, the prophet is taken there, and at a particular place, the Spirit of God says to him, Notice where the wall is crumbling. Go in there. And so, unannounced and unhindered, all he had to do was simply clear away a little rubble and enter the room. The hole in the wall was visible. But those on the outside, on the inside, did not know that it was visible. Most often, we fool only ourselves. And the crumbling walls of our secret places are more visible than we realize. What you are in your most secret place will one day be seen by those that you think will never see. The secret, cherished images that no other eye can see, they reveal what we really love. And of course, they show in a saddening fashion the depravity of our human nature. Outside the entrance of that secret place was the rubble of wasted lives and missed opportunities. You know, I'm reminded that even the Lord Jesus said, there is nothing hidden that will not be revealed. And so far less than we realize, there may be a ring of inauthenticity when we think our secrets are safe. Then notice in verses 9 and 10, the degradation of God. The people of Israel worship the one true God, maker of heaven and earth. They understood that no image could represent Him. But from their Egyptian sojourn until this day, often they had strayed and worshiped those gods which really did not exist. They did all the right things. The people in the vision, those left at the temple, were the ones who led the people. They were the ones who conducted the worship. They were responsible for the spiritual life of the nation, and in their daily routine, they were flawless. But their real worship was in the dark. Notice that the text says every man had his censer in his hand and cloud of incense was rising. That was what they did when they prayed in the context of the worship of God. Sin is destructive, even when it is not performed. And I must ask, what do you have in the image chamber? There is a secret place in all of us. There is something there that does not belong. I think I can tell you what it is. That thing that comes to mind now. No one sees. No one knows. But it is at the core. It is malignant. It can be deadly. And how tragic it is when those things that redound to our shame that denigrate the gospel become public and known. Idolatry lifts the creature above the Creator, and it lifts the animal above the spiritual. You know, we are not accustomed to thinking of physical objects as worship, you know, things that we worship, but we have our idols as well. Some of them may seem innocuous. Others we realize in candid moments are dangerous. But all of them alike are an insult to God. We live in a culture that would tell us the only thing that matters is what you do. That is not true. There is no value. There is no fulfillment in our service to God until what we do is the product of what we are. It matters what we crave, what we love, and what we cherish in the dark. It matters every bit as much as what we do. And this is a very New Testament standard. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, in a series of statements, "You have heard it said of old," that is the Ten Commandments. "For instance, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Then notice in Ezekiel 8, 11 and 12. And this is the thing that we must be most aware of: the degeneration of the conscience. We are put together psychologically because of our fallen human nature. We are put together in such a way that if you desire something long enough, an almost involuntary process occurs which will find a way for you to rationalize it. And at the first thought, it may be repulsive. With the passing of time, the repulsion goes away. And at some point, unexpectedly, it breaks out. And we wonder how it could ever happen. The amplified product of secret sin is found in the secret place, the image chamber. Worshiping earnestly day by day, it was now with their hearts that they worshiped the objects of their desire. Joseph Parker of London said this about this little moment: "Is it not true that in many enjoyments the whole delight is to be found in the secrecy of their participation? A man can hide himself from his fellow man in this matter, and can, in the very act of prayer, place himself within chambers of imagery and delight himself with visions which no eye but his own can see. They were led by Jaazaniah, whose name means the Lord hears, and they chanted, "The Lord does not see us." Psalm 139 begins, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all." Isaiah said, "Woe to those who deeply hide their plans from the Lord, and whose deeds are done in a dark place. And they say, 'Who sees us? Who knows us?'" Some of us feel vulnerable. At times, though, we feel invincible, and those are the dangerous times. And in a crowd this size, there is no question that some are painfully aware of something like this and want desperately to be free. You can be free. That's what the gospel is all about. There is nothing that the Lord cannot handle. And I beg you to allow Him to do that before it breaks out. What you do is meaningless and empty until He is Lord in the secret place. Any desire to change that you have is an invitation from His Spirit to do so. I've seen it happen. I pray I never will again. But it may. There are just a handful of lessons to be found for us here, and let me simply state them. No matter how reflective of truth the forms of our faith and worship are, when the forms are the main thing, there is death. What you are in your most secret place will one day work its way out for the world to see. There is no value or fulfillment in our Christian lives until what we do is the product of what we are. It matters as much what we cherish in the dark as it does what we do. Sin is deadly and destructive even when it is not physically performed. Any desire you have to change is an invitation and an offer of the power to do so by the Holy Spirit. Do not wait until in an unexpected moment the door is open and the light floods in and the voice says, "Hast thou seen what they do in the dark?" Everyone in their chambers of imagery. Please pray with me. Father, I pray very simply that by your grace, you would help us to pray with David. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me. And lead me in the way everlasting. May it be so to the glory of Christ.